Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Vacation Station Travel and Leisure Show. Welcome to Big Blend Radio. Today we get to chat with Faye Brenner. And you know, we've been wanting to do this podcast with her for about over a year now. And she's about to take off to France. So welcome back. I get to say welcome back on the show because you're actually on a former podcast we had over a year ago. Yeah. So welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Looking forward to heading to France this afternoon.
Oh, man. That's awesome. Cool. What's the first thing you're going to do when you get there?
Drop my bags off.
Yeah. Do you have like any rituals like when you get to a place and...
Well, this time I'm traveling with 21 other people.
Ooh.
And I'm in charge.
Oh, boy.
So it's a matter of getting everybody out of customs, making sure everyone has his or her bag. And then we're going to go directly to the hotel, even though check-in isn't until 3. But a little hint, all hotels will hold your luggage.
Mm.
So our plan is to drop our luggage, find a little cafe to sit and have lunch, and then head over to the Opera House, which is supposed to be beautiful.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
See, I'm thinking wine is necessary as soon as you land.
Definitely at dinner.
I don't care about time, you know, but we're excited to chat with you because you've written a book called Collie Wobbles, Tales of Travel, Life, and Anxiety. And everyone, it's out now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all those places. But you can also go to Faye's website. It's fayebrenner.com. And that's F-A-Y-E. The link is in the show notes. But Nancy, you've been reading it again.
Yeah, no, I started it before. And then got off track with other things and went back to it. And I, you know, it just is.
She keeps laughing.
I know. Yeah.
Because, well, it's That's good. Funny. It makes me happy that you're laughing because it's supposed
well,
to be
because
humorous.
It's funny, you know, because being a tour guide is not the easiest thing. And people have a million questions. And sometimes, like, do you ever find yourself like, three or four people are asking different questions all at the same time, and you're like, whoa, okay, can we, you know, take a moment here, slow down, look at the scenery, and do one at a time?
Yeah, one of the things that's frustrating is when you give a whole set of instructions, like where to meet, when to meet, and then you finish, and you get off the bus, and people come up to you, what time are we meeting?
Yeah.
Where are we meeting?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of the frustrating things. And then also, some people just don't listen to you, and then it's your fault because they didn't listen to you. But for the most part, people are wonderful, and we just have a good time.
Well, you know, I want to go into your background of you are a teacher. You're an educator, right? More on the drama side of life.
Yeah, so I majored in theater and English and got certified to teach both. It's very hard to be a theater teacher and have children because you do the plays and rehearsals go late. So I gave theater up when my kids were young. Mm. And then I had an opportunity. I left education for 7 years and I ran a summer camp for kids.
Oh, cool.
And I actually started there during the summers when I was still teaching and I was the drama counselor. So we were putting on mini versions of musicals like Fiddler on the Roof and Sound of Music. And but I've always loved to travel and we added a trip to Israel. We added some other trips in camp as well. And then I went back to education. And then when I retired from teaching, from education, I went to tour guiding school and got certified to be a tour director and a tour guide. And that lasted about 7 years until my ankle, I have a very bad ankle from a previous injury, and I finally couldn't do it anymore.
Oh, wow. And you also wrote a book.
Yes. So during the pandemic, I wanted to write a book about my travels. And somebody told me that they had a friend who wrote one. And so I bought his book. And it was so boring. And then I realized that my book was so boring. Because you know when your friends talk about a trip, we'll show you all those pictures and it's boring. So I put it away. And I put it away for at least a year. And then I was talking to my daughter and I have a lot of anxiety. And I don't remember now what it was about, but she said, Ma, you're catastrophizing. And I was like, whoa, that's what I should do. I should write a book about all my anxieties and how I deal with those anxieties when I travel. And then about 6-7 years ago, I started to take a anti-anxiety medication, which completely changed my feelings and my anxiety, brought it down levels. And so then I write before and after. Before Celexa and after Celexa.
So this helps with, is it more of a chemical thing that happens for anxiety?
Yeah. So it's actually used for an antidepressant as well as anti-anxiety. Mm-hmm. I'm not depressed, but terrible anxiety. And it changed my life. I will never forget the first trip I took after taking medication was to Sorrento, and we went to the island of Capri. And there is a funicular that goes up, and it's just a seat, a wooden seat, and you're alone in the seat. And I never would have done that. And I was on there, and I was, my friend was ahead of me, and I'm just screaming, Susan, look at me, look at me.
I'm doing it.
Yeah, and so... it really made a difference.
It's got, because the anxiety part, especially as a tour guide, I mean, Nancy, didn't you have some anxiety, or did you just drink wine when things went crazy?
Well, there was...
I know you didn't just drink
wine,
but...
Tour, that group that I had, was all women and one man. And that combination is not necessarily a good one. And there were several women all after the guy.
Oh my gosh!
And it was it turned brutal at some times. I mean, so there were times like one lady went to sit next to the guy, and a lady came up behind her and pulled her chair out, so she fell, and things like that. And I was like, "How old are you people?
Yeah,
seriously."
But the anxiety to me is about getting all the details right. So, does medication help you with that part of it too? Or, I mean, did you ever feel anxious about, or does anxiety, when you start actually working on something, does anxiety subside a bit when you're actually in the flow of the job, basically?
In the flow of the job, sometimes it just works itself out, but it's going to totally depend upon, you know, what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there were so many stories about our bus breaking down, about the first day of a tour, a bus driver had a significant accident in Manhattan.
Oh.
And it was the first day of the tour, and we had to wait 2 hours for the police to come.
Wow.
And so then the anxiety. But then sometimes, you know, so for example, we have tickets for the boat to go to the Statue of Liberty. And we have time tickets, and we're in New Jersey on our way, and we're all backed up. And I said to the driver, because your driver's your best friend and you have to communicate with him or her. And I said, we're never going to make it. He said, no, we're not. I said, okay. I called up the Statue of Liberty. I told them, and they gave us a later time. And he said to me, thank you so much. I said, for what? He said, most tour guides would be yelling in my head.
Yeah.
I'm saying, find another way. This isn't good. We're going to miss the boat.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you slow down, it's easier to solve problems.
Well, see, it's the same thing as yesterday when on our way to come and see you, I had to turn around and go back to our previous destination because I left my wallet under a bed. Everybody, don't even ask me about it, but we do some weird things when we travel. But, you know, so, and I'm like immediately at the gas station realize, and, you know, we paid for our gas. Yes, Nancy has money too. And so I'm like, I called you immediately and called the couple, you know, we had just left their place and called immediately and said, hey, you know, this is what's happened, instead of like, you know, freaking out.
Right.
I was still mad about it because then I was like,
can get frustrated, we can get mad, but, you know,
you move on.
Especially when you travel, it's really difficult to remember every single
thing. You can't, and you have checklists and things like that, but the anxiety doesn't help. Like, well, you have to have a release. You know, there's things in travel. I mean, this year we've been through so much driving in horrendous
the snow, you were telling me
ice, snow, like mountain passes with ice at night, blizzards at night on 2-lane highways with trucks. And you're going, all right, you better sing, you better swear, you can do whatever you need to do to get through it. And you do.
Yeah.
You have to focus, you know, and you can't let nerves kind of take it over. But anxiety and nerves, are they the same or no?
I guess they're similar. You know, with anxiety, very often, you know, at least for me, it always ends up like in my stomach.
Yeah.
Or I get a tingling in my head. But, you know, when you're anxious, you're not always nervous. You're just, you're afraid that something's going to happen. I don't know.
Oh, so you're waiting for the other shoe to drop almost all the time.
Yeah. Or I don't know what I used to think. I used to be afraid of elevators. And one time I was in an elevator and we kept pressing the button and it wasn't going anywhere. And I had a total panic attack. I was like, open the doors, open the doors, open the doors. And, you know, so... You know, and now I don't have that problem anymore.
I have that with mountain passes, going up heights. I get vertigo. I think in my past life I went down a cliff or something. Maybe Thelma and Louise. I'm not in the mood for that. No, but your book title is Collywobbles. Explain what a collywobble.
So collywobble. It's a British slang. I got so excited. I was watching a British show the other day, and they use the word because it's not a very often used word. Although there is another book called Collywobbles.
Oh dear.
So make sure that you know you get the.
But do it by Faye book. Brenner, everyone.
But. But it means having those butterflies in your stomach, you know, that kind of, you know, nervousness.
Did that happen in regards to theater for you, too? Because that's putting on a show, whether or not you're in it, but you're running it. Did you have that kind of same
No,
thing?
I don't know why I wasn't anxious about theater, but I'm always anxious. Even now, I mean, so now I'm retired and I run our 55-plus communities travel club. So most of that work is before you leave. So it's getting people answering questions. I've got one woman who is so anxious and, you know, she keeps saying, I'm sorry for bothering you. I keep telling her she's not bothering me, but, you know, she doesn't know the very basics. You know, we checked in yesterday and she just checked it. It's an Air France Delta flight. And she said, well, do we also have to check in with Air France too? And so just sometimes, or, you know, is this bag too big, too little? What bag should I take? And, you know, you want to say...
Don't take anything. Pack light. Yeah. It's the much easier thing if you pack light, you know?
Yeah, but we work with tour operators. So once, you know, once I get on the plane and I know basically my job is done... and the tour operator takes over.
Oh, see, then she can have wine.
Yeah. Right. Oh, no. Yeah. Well, even as a tour director at night, I always had wine.
Or otherwise, you can't do it.
So you said you've been to around 50 countries now.
Yeah, I haven't counted them in a while.
But this is pretty exciting to think about for... it's inspiring for if you have anxiety and you're scared to travel to not... Because I think a lot of people don't travel internationally because they're scared of airplanes. You know, they don't, people get anxiety getting on an airplane. And I understand that, you know.
Well, especially now with the Boeing, with the door falling off.
Holy cow, that's like a movie thing, man.
Yeah, I did look and I do have a Boeing, but it's not the one that But still, no matter what, you are so much safer in an airplane than you are in a car. You are so much more likely to be hit by a car. To die in a car accident than a plane. So, and
great, you made me feel better now.
Well, people laugh at me because one of my favorite shows is Air Disasters. And I watch all the airplanes, you know, falling apart or whatever. But at the end, they always say, well, this will never happen again because we learned this. And then they make changes. It gets bad when you learn they knew why it happened. They didn't make the fix right away, and then it happened again a few months later.
That's where the Boeing thing's a little wonky.
So you might want to carry some extra door clips, or I don't know what
to you take bungee cords and start bungeeing things. It's like bungee cord the door. But, you know, the FAA was actually formed from a plane crash that landed in the Grand Canyon, what is now our Grand Canyon National Park, and they have a whole exhibit on that. Isn't that crazy?
I mean, we were just there. We saw that, and we saw where, you know, it went down. Well, you can't go down there, but we saw where it went down.
Well, the Grand Canyon's kind of like a big burial ground now. So many people bail over.
Well, I'll tell you, before I was on the Select, I took my dad to the Grand Canyon, and we were at the West Rim. There was no barrier at all on the West Rim. Yeah, and he and I were so nervous, both of us.
Yeah, I get the shakes.
And there was a little snack bar at the end, and until we went and we got lunch and we sat down at a picnic table, did I start to relax. And some of my tour directing friends make fun of the guests who you get to the Grand Canyon, they see it, they take pictures, they say, okay, when are we leaving? And I was like that. I was like, okay, I got here, I saw the Grand Canyon, let's go.
Yeah, you get nervous.
There's a lady who just turned and said, like, so it's a big hole.
Yeah, yeah. That's beautiful, like, though.
But it is. It's magnificent.
Actually, and right. I encourage people to go to the North Rim. The North Rim is absolutely incredible, and it's kind of the, because it's not easy to get to. It's not like, it's off the beaten path, kind of, depending on where you're going, but it's gorgeous.
What park were we in where you were standing at the edge of cliff looking down, and there was a little couple rung of pipage as a guard, but you just stepped over it because it was so low? And that little boy came running, and I thought,
that was the North Rim. That was the North Rim, and I didn't go down. Nancy did, and Nancy almost went down on her hands and knees to get back up because one of the ones
was going to push you. And yeah, and his mother was drinking beer, and I'm looking at her, and I'm like,
"What's wrong with you?
Your child
is going to go down."
And she couldn't even talk, and I was like, "Whoa, okay."
But no, I think that was somewhere else. There was a Black Canyon of the Gunnison that was pretty bad. Like, looking down, you get to the edge of certain parks. But
yeah,
I have nerves like that, but I will do it. I'm like, I go in and I just have Bob Marley playing in my head and I chill out. It's like a hypnosis kind of thing. So if I do mountain passes, I have certain music and I just focus on the music and then I enjoy myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I do much better at that now than I did before, although I never stopped. And then I would have rituals. So, for example, even though I was never really afraid of a plane, I get very nervous until we get to the gate. I think I'm afraid of missing the plane, or I don't know what I'm afraid of, but I do get nervous until I get to the gate. Once I'm at the gate, I'm fine. But what I used to do is I always took a picture of the plane, and then I thought, well, if I took a picture of the plane, it's not going to crash.
Okay, that makes sense.
I know there's no sense in it, but it was a ritual, and people have rituals. My daughter, anytime, she's now a stay-at-home mom, but when she was working, she traveled a lot, and she had a ritual that she would buy the newest Economist magazine, and she would, that's what she would do in the plane, is read the Economist, and it was just a ritual that she had when she was flying. Not necessarily for anxiety, but something that, you know,
it calms and centers you. I know a lot of athletes do it, you know, and actors and actresses and have a ritual of doing things. You know, I have weird things like that. Like, yeah, there's just certain things that center your brain, goes, oh, yeah, I know that you're happy when you do this, so you're okay.
Yeah.
You know,
and getting back to the book a minute, because it's not all about anxiety. Some of it, you know, just are things.
Nancy says you're looking at a lot of men.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a chapter on men, you know, the first time I saw it.
Well, your website talks about, yes, there's penises, and
I'm like, okay.
There's a whole chapter on penises. So
there's a penis.
And then I got really upset because I didn't find out that there was a penis museum
in Asia. There's a
penis. In Sicily. There's one in Iceland, and I did go to the one in Iceland.
Now, what about the penises in Asia? No, isn't there a place in Asia where there's a bunch of penises everywhere, penis gods and penis sculptures?
Yes. It's in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Yes, we were there. And so that's in the book. And, you know, the David, you know, when I was, the first time I went to Europe, I was a junior in high school. And I hate to admit this, but I had not seen a penis by the time I was a junior in high school. And I looked at David and I said, that looks like it's really small. So you know, I had a little bit of an education. And then, you know, and actually there is a lot about me in there. I had a neighbor who read my book, and she came up to me and she said, I enjoyed it, but why would you ever share those things? They're very, very personal. And she said, well, now everyone in the neighborhood will know. And I said, well, you know, if they're uncomfortable, except I must say my children will not read the book.
Oh, really? Wow. Well, I think being personal, it helps because everyone has something that they'll relate to.
Yeah.
And it's that when it's not personal, it's kind of like, here's your boring, like you were talking about. Personal, you connect with and makes us all human.
Yeah. Your powers of observation, they do their own thing. They observe what they want to observe. You know, like I'm into observing nature, and it's not like I chose it. It's just does it. Mm-hmm. You know, so if there's people and a bird or an animal all in the same space, I'm not looking at the people. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the bird right. or the
and
animal.
And by the way, Nancy has a ton of slides from Africa of animals humping, if it makes you feel any better. We've got elephant penis, zebra penis.
Yes, they're big. I mean, we were on a safari at Chobe National Park, and one of the guys in the Jeep said, that elephant has a fifth leg.
But they do.
The elephant penis is 6 feet long.
Yeah. I mean, how do they, I don't know how they hoist.
No, I forgot the word. It's in the book. I forgot the word. But there is a term for they can use their penis to pick things up.
It's like their extra.
It's a real tool.
Yes, it is.
The extra trunk.
So, have you heard of the Plastercaster Sisters?
No,
No.
Okay, it's in the 60s and 70s in the music scene. They went around to all the famous musicians like Jimi Hendrix. He broke his. And they, after parties, after performances, you know, while everyone's drinking and getting high, they would go and do plaster molds of the penis. And they had, I don't know if it's peni or penises, but you're the English person. Is it penises?
Penises.
Okay. Of course, you know, they had to make sure that the penis would rise to the occasion. And they would do it, and they had all these molds. And I think one of them is still alive, one of the Plastercaster Sisters. But apparently Jimi Hendrix did his, and it completely shattered.
Oh.
So he broke the mold. Well,
there is one famous singer in the Iceland Penis Museum, but now I can't remember who it was. But there's a cast of this.
Oh, cast, not a...
Yeah. Oh, no, the cast.
I'm like, do they have it floating in a little bottle?
No, it's all animals. They have the penises of all the animals on the walls and in
things. Oh, how funny.
Wow, this is... Who knew we were going to be talking about this today? This
Why
is
would
a,
you have an animal... Penis
well,
museum.
What is what? Okay.
It's a penis museum, so it just shows you all, including elves.
What?
Elf. They have an elf. Yeah,
an elf.
Well, because the Icelandics do believe in elves.
How did they get an elf?
Well, I think they made it up. I hope they made it up.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's interesting because you know penises are interesting whether they've been circumcised or not as well. That's a whole other art form. Anyway. Right.
And so David should have been circumcised, and he wasn't. And so I did a little research, and the reason that he's not is that the model was not. And he wanted to model it after the Greek, you know, Olympians models. Mm-hmm. And so hence it is not a circumcised one.
Oh. So there you go, everybody. You know, get over anxiety through penis observations. But it's fun. I mean, traveling, and isn't that kind of the thing, too, when you go to a place, a lot of times people try to cram absolutely everything in, and then it becomes a blur.
Yeah.
So when you travel, do you look at, do you give yourself breaks and times to really, when you go through the museum, maybe not try to do all the exhibits, but go see maybe the penis exhibit or whatever it is that's like the art museum.
I think
museum.
You have to, especially, you know, in Paris, the Musée d'Orsay, the Louvre, you can't see all of them.
Yeah.
And I love Anthony Bourdain. And in one of his books, he talked about Paris, and he said the same thing you just said. He said, if you try to see everything, you'll see nothing.
Right.
And he said, the best thing to do is just walk along the streets, you know, smell, sit down, have a cup of coffee, have a baguette. And that's what, I mean, we do have tickets to see the major sites, but I'm really looking forward to just walking around. And you asked me when we get there. So the plan is just to find some place to eat, walk around the streets. And, you know, we get there at 8 in the morning. At 2 o'clock, we have our first appointment. So
assimilate into the culture.
Yeah, I think that's it. Nancy and I are always like, just go for a walk, you know? I mean, as we pet sit the country, one of my things is to go for dog walks. You get to spy on people's gardens. You know, we have our garden gossip podcast for that. You're like, oh, they're growing this over here, you know, and immerse yourself in the neighborhoods, in the culture of the place. And oh, you guys drink this kind of coffee here. Like, you're in Durham, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. What would you say is a taste of North Carolina? Donuts. I heard that you guys are
Duck Donuts. Yeah, I'm not a great fan of Duck Donuts.
Well, what about Krispy Kremes? Don't they come from here too?
Yeah, Krispy Kreme. Well, actually, the first Krispy Kreme was in Alexandria, Virginia. So I used to go to that one when I lived in Alexandria. But here, definitely barbecue. There's, you know, the difference between Eastern North Carolina barbecue and Western. Mm-hmm. The Eastern is a vinegar base. So it's a really big thing in North Carolina. It's one of the reasons my son moved to Durham was for the barbecue.
Really?
So that would be the first thing that I...
Do you like to go and is food a part of it when you travel?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I try to take a cooking lesson everywhere I go.
Okay.
I think it's so important because you, again, like you said, you get the culture and it's just fun cooking. And I try to go to one where we're actually cooking.
Yeah, not just the audience. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately for Paris, we haven't found one that works, but maybe when we get there, we'll see. The next best thing is a walking food tour.
Yeah.
So then you can taste all these different things. You know, I did that in Iceland. People said to me before I went, the one thing about Iceland is the food's not good. That's a total lie.
No, wait. I have a friend who said it's expensive as heck.
Yes.
But he said he had the best hamburger, cost him a fortune, but it was the best hamburger, and he's traveled the world. Like, I think he's done, like, he's over 100 countries. Including North Korea. And he was like, I don't know about the food in North Korea, but this was the thing. And he's a foodie person.
Yeah, the food was good. I was the only one who didn't taste the fermented shark.
Oh, no. And lutefisk when you go to Norway.
No.
But I tasted haggis in
Scotland. Yeah. We've had haggis. We've had, Scotch eggs are good. I'm into Scotch eggs. Those are good. To try stuff is, to me, it's interesting because a lot of times those dishes come from peasant food, you know? So it's the food of the people, not necessarily the royalty.
And they have the seasoning of the place.
Right.
It's really a taste of the place, you know?
And sometimes the whole thing, the environment is like amazing. So, you know, and not always in a good way, but it's so different. So we went to Peru. We had dinner at someone's home. And we went into this like barn, this small barn with a big table set up. And it was for the guinea pigs in Peru. They eat guinea pig. So there were guinea pigs running around under the table and they served us guinea pig for dinner. So that was I didn't eat the guinea pig. They did have chicken. But the people who did and what they said is it tastes just like chicken. But it's really weird eating an animal and having them run around underneath your feet.
That's
a weird feeling because, it's so weird because even when we take care of chickens, I'm like, I feel bad about eating your eggs, but I'm going to because they're really good. But then you see that they'll eat their eggs too. I mean, once in a while they'll do their thing.
Vitamins.
Chickens are interesting. They'll eat snakes, you know. Chickens and roadrunners are guinea fowl. They're really good for your property. But yeah, it's really weird to see a pig and then go, okay, I'm going to have bacon. Isn't it, Nancy?
Yes. You guys taste good.
I know. That's my point.
But now you go to a pig roast and you see that big pig oh my God, but it is delicious.
How was Egypt?
Egypt was amazing. Now, when you were talking, Nancy, about having that group of women and I thought of Egypt. There were only 13 of us on the trip to Egypt, and it was 13 women. It was an all-women's trip. And this is an interesting change in the way things are going because our country is so divided. Our group was divided. Six Republicans and seven Democrats. And it got nasty sometimes. And we just decided, you know, I was once in a little van. We were going for our home cooked meal. I love doing home cooked meals.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And I said something about Jane Fonda. We were talking about a movie and she had, you know, work on her face, and I thought she looked better before she had the work. And they went.
She does too.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Jane Fonda's cool. You should hear her on Julia Dreyfus's podcast. That's one of the best It's very
so cool. She said she is sorry that
she, well, she just said it. She did what she could, you know, and some is and some, you know.
Yeah.
But she's, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's all I said is I thought she looked better. Well, they went bananas saying, you know, oh, she is, you know, a treasonist to the United States.
Yeah, from
States,
Vietnam.
And, you know, we don't even mention her name and, you know, Hilton, whatever. You know.
Oh, come on, but she made vibrators with Lil in whatchamacallit, the Grace and Frankie.
Grace
and Frankie. Who did the toilet brush with Hillary Clinton?
I don't know, but people do all kinds of things
like
with people, but I was talking about Jane Fonda in the Grace and Frankie TV show, no one put her face on anything like that, but the there's got to be a balance. I mean, we've been as we travel, you know, that as pet sitters, like, it's an immersive experience, and we're very middle road. We are not, and some people go, oh, you're arranging this, you're arranging that, we're a liberal, we're conservative, sometimes Democrat, everybody's like, you're this, and we're like, no, actually, we vote by issue and by, you know, this
by
and that.
The person and the issue,
and so, and we're able to sit and have a conversation because of the way we are and listen. And
but
it's
when
better,
it comes, I'm sorry.
No, but people do fight.
Yeah, and when it comes to Trump, it's hard not to.
Everybody, that becomes a big contention where, you know, either, you know, people either love him or hate him. And that is that. And it's, and I think it's going to be so hard when you're in a confined travel place too, because other countries view us accordingly as well. That's a whole other thing. I know people that didn't travel here because of him. And so it was like, it's not my fault, but you know, the other thing is I think when we're traveling, we are ambassadors of our country when we travel, and sometimes countries, I think now we're starting to realize, because there's so many really bad leaders in the world right now. I mean, it's horrific what's going on everywhere. That there's good ones too. New Zealand's doing good. There's good and bad, right? But there's some really evil things happening, and repetition of history and cycles. So we're ambassadors, but I think we're getting to realize that we need to communicate as individuals, as travelers and guests and hosts, or, you know, all of that, as individuals, and not necessarily judge people in a country by their leaders. Does that make sense?
Yeah, by their leaders and, you know, and their traditions, if they're different than ours, and also respect their laws. I mean, one of those women, and we did have a conversation about politics, just very broad, and what they said is that we can't be bothered. We just don't listen to any news. So, but in, you asked about Egypt. So we were in a boat on the Nile, and there were some ports where you were allowed to swim in the Nile because it was clean, and there's some ports where you were not allowed to. And one of the women in our group, you know, she didn't want to go see the temple. She said, enough with temples. I'm going to stay on the boat. And our tour director told her, that's fine, but you can't swim here. And we all left, and she jumped into the water. The police came.
That's rude. That's,
the police,
and that's
wanted
stupid.
To arrest arrest the captain for allowing her. And, you know, the captain was able to talk them out of it. But then I thought they should have sent her home, but she's been banned from traveling ever again with this particular tour company.
But see, but that, why do people do that? It's like you're putting everybody, you're not at home.
Especially when you're told the water
and
is not.
You don't do. We've seen people
allowed.
Do that.
I mean, we were in a port where there was no swimming allowed.
Usually there's a real good reason for it. Like propellers that are on the boat that don't stop twirling until a certain point. And maybe sharks.
But you're also putting people in danger, and it's just, and you can go to jail in other countries and sometimes get stuck there.
You can get stuck.
You don't know what can happen, you know, politically when you're in another place. Like if you're in a place like Egypt, you never know. So there's that kind of fear. And I know a lot of people, we have a friend, Sharon Kurtz, and she has a podcast with us, Wonder the World with Sharon. She's awesome. She went to Egypt during the pandemic. There was this open window, and everybody looks at her like, what? She's like, I'm going. Of course, she took her mask and everything, but she had her own time with King Tut. She had her own time, which was really a cool thing. But and she went alone as a woman. That's huge.
See, I go alone, and with a tour company. So I think it's the best of two worlds.
Yes.
I've been traveling lately with much more with friends only because of the community club. But then when you want to be alone, you're not beholden to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And when you want to have dinner with somebody, you know, you have 20 or 30 other people to say, hey, can I, you know, you want to have dinner tonight? Or may I sit at your table? So I love traveling alone. Now, because of the travel club, and I'll tell people, I'm going to Argentina, Brazil, and Chile in September 2025. And I mentioned it, and two of my friends signed up for it.
Cool.
And I feel like sort of mixed feelings.
I want to go.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And actually, then I signed up a friend of mine who used to be my travel buddy. And if you read the book, Susan is a big part of the book. Mm-hmm. She was my big travel buddy. And then she's not well enough to travel anymore.
Oh.
So, at least she's dying to travel. So we found a cruise, which was very much on the boat was a lot of the scenery. It's the Amazon River.
Oh, nice.
And so, yeah, so she and I are going down the Amazon and then up the Atlantic Ocean, and we end in the Caribbean in San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Wow.
And she said, if I have to stay on the boat, I'll just stay on the boat. We talked to them, and it's biking, and biking includes
Biking's amazing.
One excursion on each one. And he said if she can't do that excursion, because most of those are sightseeing, there are alternatives. You can do a food class, cooking class. You could, you know, do – so she can choose different ones to go. So I think you have to know, you know, and because of my ankle, I'm afraid I won't be able to travel forever. Mm. So I have eight trips booked between this one and the end of 2025.
We do it while you can. I mean, look at what we're doing. I mean, it's like...
I mean, it's me. I couldn't do what you're doing.
I don't know why we're doing what we're doing, but we're having a good time. But it's
to all the states.
We have to do all the states.
How many
and all the
states
parts.
Do you have left?
I think about...
We have to make a map.
We're almost done. We haven't done properly, like Montana, Wyoming. We've touched through there, but not proper. Alaska, Hawaii, the Dakotas, Maine... And New Hampshire area.
Yeah, that's
so about 10. I think we're about 10 off.
And New Hampshire is wonderful.
We need to get to at least one park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've done, since the pandemic to now, over 1,500 parks.
Wow.
And now we're at the point where we had to take everything down off our site and rebuilding. So we're kind of traveling, pet sitting, but doing mostly production work now. Mm. So it's kind of, and still in between our travels, like in between sits, we'll go off and do our park things. Like we'll go, because we do so much work, we get to this point of everything's set to podcasts are airing, everything's gone, we'll be on the road for 3 to 4 days sometimes. Mm-hmm. We don't even book hotel rooms until we know we're there, especially in winter, it gets weird with travel. You don't know if you're going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
But you go, and roads closed on us and all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, but we just go, okay, we have to be from A to B, and we start doing parks, and then we just watch time and make sure we get to where we're going. We try to actually get closer to where we're going in case car trouble or anything, but we let it just be completely spontaneous because we want to go, like we always get into a park at sunrise. That's when the wildlife comes out and you see the whole day. And if you can spend the whole day and into the evening, and a lot of parks are great at night because you see the stars. It's a whole there's a whole other experience. But then you see this whole cycle of what's going on. So you can really explore. And so we try to do more of that.
Mm.
And then go, oh, we really stink. We need a hotel now. So it's kind of how we go. It's freeing to just kind of not have, you have to be here at this time. You have to be here at that time. Because even with hotels and stuff, that happens. Mm-hmm. So we like to, you know, balance it out. But everyone, Faye Brenner is the website, right, for people? FayeBrenner.com?
Yes. Yeah, so, and one of the things on there are photographs. So there are no photographs in the book, but there's part of the website is photos from the book. And so there are pictures of all the stories that I tell in the book.
It's awesome.
Okay, cool.
And you've also got a Facebook page that people can go to as well?
Yeah, but it's mostly, I don't keep my traveling page up to date.
Okay, so everyone go to the website. It's, again, the book is called Collie Wobbles, Tales of Travel, Life, and Anxiety, and all the links are in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us here on Big Blend Radio. Thank you, Faye. And
thank
safe
you.
Travels.
Cool, thank you.
Very cool.
And thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio's Vacation Station Travel and Leisure Show, brought to you by Big Blend Magazines. Keep up with us at bigblendradio.com or blendradioandtv.com. Happy travels!